tie her up and put her in the downstairs cupboard until we're finished. Okay, and welcome to Filmstalker Film Club. This is round six, and the choice was back to me again, and I chose three films about motor racing because the Formula One Grand Prix season has begun. And so I chose three films, first of which was Mark.
It was Le Mans with Steve McQueen in it from 1971.
And the second one was Stephen.
I believe it was Grand Prix by Frankenheimer.
Starring James Garner.
Indeed.
1966. And the third one was Winning, which I didn't realise even existed, but that's a film from 1969 starring Paul Newman, which is about... where is it they go round and round the ovals again? What's that called?
Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's about Indy racing, isn't it? I think actually that film sparked his desire for Indy, and then he started his own team, didn't he, after that? However, we didn't choose that one. We chose Grand Prix, which is a cracking film. And I think, really, is it the only film about Formula One?
There was one in 1923.
Really?
Yeah.
What was
I
that?
Can't remember. I don't know what it did or anything, but there was definitely a film of Formula One in 1923.
Wow. However, we chose Grand Prix. The film is... Well, I don't know. The film blurb, I don't think, is what the film's about. However... The story is that there's two rival racing drivers. They're in the same team. And early on in the Grand Prix season, they have an accident together. And one of them is really seriously injured. So he's out for a while. The other one is blamed, and he's kicked out of the team. He finds another job with a new Japanese team, and he starts racing for them. And meanwhile, the other driver recovers and returns to Formula One, and there's this big rivalry throughout the season. Meanwhile, they're battling against the top team, which is Ferrari, obviously, and two drivers there, which is quite interesting because it's an old driver almost on his way out and a young driver just on his way in, and they're kind of leading the pack. And so that's what the story's build. It's about this relationship between these two rival racing drivers and this accident. But I don't think that's the real focus. I think it's more about the French driver for Ferrari, the Asian one, that's kind of on his last days racing. And he kind of feels like he's a bit tired and he's seen a bit much of the Grand Prix. But for me, the focus of the film was more about him than about the Garner relationship.
I think that plot, the plot you've given is, I sense that's aimed at the American audience. You know, because... Like, I think that the French guy's story was the bigger story as well.
Mm.
But you look at the DVD cover, it's Garner. The disc, the DVD I've got on two discs, one's Garner, the other one's the Italian guy, because he's a young... And you wouldn't know the French guy was in this had you not watched it. I agree. Well, I'm saying that. I mean, I don't think the story, and we'll probably get to that later on, is insignificant. I mean, the film isn't about the story. You could do without a story and enjoy it just as much. I don't think you need that story.
Well, I think you need a story.
You can't get action in between the story. I mean, this is story in between the action, for me.
Yeah, but I think you need the story. I think one of the things about Grand Prix that it does really well is it doesn't just leap into the action. It really builds the characters. Yeah, and it builds them slowly.
The opening scene leaps into the action. The whole first 10 minutes, I don't think there's any speaking. It's just maybe there's background talking as they show the action.
Hmm.
I think it's set up right from the beginning as an action film. The whole beginning montage is action.
You watch any other racing film, and well, actually, so they seem to borrow a lot from this one, but you watch any racing film, and they get lost in the racing. And there are loads of racing. There's lots of racing in Grand Prix. However, there's also loads and loads of the characters and the people behind the racers.
Yeah, but for me, that was part of the problem.
Oh, really?
I really did want it to get back to the racing ASAP. I really couldn't wait. And as for the kind of stories, I think, you know, you're both right. Because for me, I thought it was about, you know, the Scott Stoddard, the Scottish guy, and his recovery and him dealing with his you know, his crash and then kind of getting back on his feet and back in the car. That was the story as I saw it in the relationships that he has with James Garner and stuff.
That's a shame, actually. Yeah, I think that was one area where the film didn't hold up well was his story. I thought the French guy's story was done really well. It's Jean-Pierre Sarté was the character's name.
Yeah.
But Scott Stoddard's story was, I don't know, it just felt kind of flimsy and flat, and like we're just being told what happened to him and showing it and like, let's move on. I didn't really feel like I was getting into the emotional failure of the character.
I did, you see. Well, I think that's, you know, just how it goes sometimes, isn't it? You see different stuff in there, but especially during his recuperation period, I thought that worked really, really well. And especially, you know, if you look at the context, and it is a long film,
yeah,
which would have been, you know, I didn't know that. I put on expecting an hour and 45 minutes of, you know, cars and women, and I got 3 hours of emotional melodrama in between some bits of cars. So, but you know, I really enjoyed it, and I thought that Brian Bedford played that role fantastically well.
Yeah, I think they could have done more on him.
Yeah, I didn't like the Bedford guy. I didn't think he played it, but I mean, it's obviously how you look at things. I mean, he wasn't bad, but I thought he was the weak link in the film. Funnily enough,
really,
if there was a weak link, I'd have said Bedford would have been involved. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the film. It was a great film.
Yeah,
but if I was listing them, then he'd have come and bottom Bedford.
Yeah, you see, I'd have pegged Eva Marie Saint at the bottom. Because that just really didn't cut the mustard for me, but.
Oh yeah, sorry, I'm not saying yeah.
Oh yeah, and secondary characters, yeah, absolutely. She was the token good-looking woman chucked in, although she had a bit of depth to her story, but it wasn't really much.
No, I wasn't thinking of that. I mean, if I was choosing a woman, the good one was the one that had the least bit in it, and it was the Italian's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Who isn't even an actress. I think she was a singer. I'm sure that's the only film she's been in.
Yeah, it's something like that, singer or model. But, yeah, I mean, the female characters are very weak. And that's because they're just used as a distraction for the male characters who are racing, aren't they?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you write it down on paper, the three storylines that are key, that Sarté, the agent driver, I've forgotten his name, Pete Aaron, who's James Garner played, the driver who's coming to terms with having caused a near fatal accident and seen some terrible things around him and trying to fight back to try and win. And Scott Stoddard, who did you say was played by again? I'm just having a wee look.
Brian Bedford.
So I think out of those three key storylines, for me, it was on paper, the strongest one was the guy recuperating. But I just didn't think it was handled well enough to build to bring you down to the depths of character, build it up again a bit, and then show you how he's getting addicted to painkillers during the race and how that was affecting him. It was just kind of, oh, look at this. Here's the latest but sad part of the story. Here's the next down part of the story. Let's move on again.
Surely, though, isn't that down to the director?
Yes, absolutely. Or the scriptwriter, I don't know which, but yeah. Yes. But yeah, and I'm not blaming the actor, but I don't think that character storyline, although it does scream that there should be more of it, I just don't think it had enough time. It didn't have enough depth.
I mean, bizarrely, for a three-hour film, there wasn't. It could have been longer, and you know, to build up these stories. And I still think the stories were relevant to what the film was about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a too long film. Yeah, it could have been longer, and they'd have still missed things out from the melodrama side of the film.
Yeah, I mean, I put it on this afternoon, and you know, it was like 3 hours. Oh, God, last thing I want to be doing on a Sunday afternoon is watching a flick of a sport that I've got no particular interest in. But it held me absolutely captivated. And it's, you know, usually when I watch a movie that I'm not that engaged, I kind of sit and mess around and stuff. But I was glued to the screen. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, although
the bad bits not the bad bits, but I wanted the action to come back. And I'm not a fan of action, but in this, it's what this film was about, the way the races were done. Yeah, I was happy in between that, knowing that these races were coming. I just think the story was the weaker of this and the action
Yeah, and the action's great. I think before we start talking about how great the action is, for me, the whole idea of the Grand Prix season was mishandled. I didn't have a sense of the races progressing from race to race. I didn't really understand, I didn't get a handle on what sort of positions they were in until it was blatantly told to you. And sometimes during the race, even during the racing sequences, I was struggling to work out who was in the lead and who wasn't until the final race when they start telling you. You know, that could have been watching, being a fan of Formula One and watching racing and progressing through the races in a season. It's that's the real thing you do follow, and I find that didn't flow through the races for me. There were set races which were really well done, but that. Understand of where they were, what sort of position they were in, just didn't flow for me.
I mean, whether it's because I'm not a Formula One fan, I didn't mind not really knowing who was in the lead. I saw a coloured car, I figured I knew who it was. I mean, there was two red cars, I figured it must be the French guy leading, and I wasn't that bothered with who was winning. I just thought it looked fantastic, it had been done fantastic. And yeah, I thought the way they progressed the races, I mean, it felt like the season was moving on to me.
Oh, yeah, it's moving on. But you just think of all the tension that could have been built up, knowing that who was in the lead race to race, and maybe it was close, and Pete Aaron had a load to gain, and he was gaining it race by race, but maybe not enough. You know, there's a lot. I thought there was a lot more could be gained from that.
I mean, I don't think that was what they set out to me. I think he just wanted to film cars going fast, like nobody had filmed cars going fast before, and he did that.
And nobody ever did again, because
it
was amazing.
Yeah, you could not do that again. I mean, you can imagine strapping a camera onto the side of an F1 car now and filming during a race.
Yeah, so just to give, it depends who the people who are listening. It depends if they've actually watched the 2-disc version and watched the audio commentaries and the extras, but it was a bit of a surprise to me to find out that they'd got the stars, they'd taught them how to really race, and then strapped on proper wide 35mm cameras on the side of the cars and remote controlled them. So they'd be filming the actual actor racing the car around the circuit, and the camera would sweep round the front of the car and show them racing. And that when I saw that happen, it happens about 3 times. That's just pan shot. It's just mind-blowing. Because there's James Garner racing. You think, oh, he's in a trolley car or something. And this remote control camera turns around and shows that he's really racing and there's nobody else around him apart from other racing cars who were driven by real Formula One racing drivers as well.
I mean, it was only Bedford, I believe, that didn't drive because the director got some racer to show them how to drive cars. And he said, Garner's a natural. The French guy's not very good, but he'll get there. Bedford will never drive. And did they not tour Bedford around when they had to show his face?
Yeah.
Otherwise, he had his face mask on, so you didn't see him.
Yeah. Because he's the only one that wears a mask, isn't he? And that's why. So, and the dark goggles.
Yeah, that was right. I remember hearing that in the extras, that he never really actually raced.
I didn't know how they did it. And that I was going to ask if anybody knew how they did those bits. And you know, it sounds so rudimentary now, but at the time, that must have been really progressive to do that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Because even watching it now, you know, in the land of CGI, and when we're used to seeing that, it still looks just as impressive. And for me, the best technical bits, it wasn't the, you know, the panning of the camera. It was the focus on the details, like when they changed gear. Yeah. And you see the bits of the car move. I just thought that was amazing.
Yeah, that was a real way he conveyed about the actual racing.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that bit. The mixing of the gear changing, the focus on the steering, the way he filmed the cars and the drivers all mixed together to provide nigh on perfect racing. And there was nothing like you'll see now. You'll see in Fast and Furious, and they're driving around down a 2-metre straight, and they do 16 million gear changes. And you're like, oh, Christ, come on, how many gears you got? And I don't know, he just filmed this as a real racer or a fan of racing would. But when that pan happened, I suddenly realised, because I didn't realise at the time, I suddenly realised these guys are actually racing, because I hadn't watched, I watched the extras afterwards, obviously.
Mm.
So to discover that was real at that moment, I was just like, oh my God! And it just blew me away to see that. Especially when they're going up in the embankment turn and everything, that was just crazy.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
And it's the same with Gander's Trash, where he just kind of burst into flames.
Yeah.
If you remember on the extras, his insurance, they cancelled his insurance for the remainder of the shoot after that, because they said, we're not insuring you, because you're going to hurt yourself.
But that's real, isn't it?
Stops, burst into flames, and he climbs out.
Yeah, well, it's not just that, is it? It bursts into flames, he's climbing out, and his suit catches fire.
Yes.
This is James Garner. It's an accident on set. He gets out, and he does he throw himself down the floor and start rolling or something?
The guys jump around in, realize down, I think they spray him as well.
Yeah, guys, fire extinguishers.
Yeah, and that's the set. That's everything going wrong, but they kept it in the film, and I thought, that's just awesome.
I didn't know that. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that was one of the extras. And there were some interesting tidbits in there, actually. The fact Ferrari were... They just weren't interested in letting their name or the cars or anything get used. So Frankenheimer filmed the Monaco race and then showed it to Ferrari. He actually shipped it across and took it to Ferrari and showed them it in their offices. And the head of Ferrari went, okay, you can have everything you need.
Really?
You can have the cars, you can have the garage, everything. Because they were so paranoid about people showing Formula One in a bad light. And then when they saw what he'd done and about the Monaco race, the film and style he'd done, he was just blown away and he said, you can have everything.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was quite cool as well.
Yeah.
And there's an excellent shot in the extras, actually, of Garner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was Garner had... So his character has an accident in the water. That sounds bad. He's not like lying in the water and he pees himself. He goes off the circuit in his car, lands in the water. So they were filming his bit where he had to sit in the water. But what was happening is that all these Monaco shop owners were holding the film to ransom. So he'd keep coming out every now and again and go, we want more money. And they would just stop production. So they had to pay him more money. And this happened while Garner was out in the water, freezing his butt off. And they've got film of Garner coming up to one of these shop owners and totally losing his rag and telling him to... Just how much money does he want? Because just give it to him and shut the hell up. I'm freezing my butt off out there. And all you can do is moan, blah, blah, blah. And he was really getting angry. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of it looks like Wicker's World is doing a documentary on the making of this film. Because there's interviews with him. I don't know whether it was their crew that filmed that.
Yeah, just some absolutely great moments. But it's interesting to think that that whole race was filmed... And they didn't have Ferrari behind them. They didn't have quite a lot of the teams behind them. And it was that film that took Ferrari on. And then when they also Ferrari was on, they got unrivaled access. Because it was apparently done that it was filmed at the weekend of the Formula One Grand Prix in Monaco. Because obviously everybody was there. The track was set up. The cars were there.
Mm.
So they kept interrupting things to do scenes. And people were none too happy.
Didn't know that. So I haven't watched the extras, so that was kind of quite nice. One of the things that I really enjoyed about the film was the fact it was filmed in the 60s and it was the state of Grand Prix at the time. And, you know, people stood on top of a church watching and hanging off billboards and stuff like that. And for me, that seemed more engaging than watching kind of F1 now, because I just think it's boring.
Yeah. Of course, I mean, some of the racing tracks didn't seem to have pits.
Yeah. They
just pulled over to the side of the road.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, no, it's just...
That was the grand old age of Formula One racing. I mean, it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
To see that kind of racing. Because, and I saw Stirling Moss talking about the Monaco Grand Prix today, and he was saying, you know, I wouldn't want to race nowadays. I loved racing when I did because, you know, there was the genuine feeling you could die at every corner. And I loved that because it was such a rush. You would come out, I haven't died. What a rush that is.
And I think that came across in the French guy's story in the film. And that's I think that's why that story was, for me, the one that stuck out, because that's how the Formula One career went.
Yeah.
They probably did wonder, should they be doing it?
Mm.
And then, Yeah, and then they get to an age where they start to realise, I mean, it happens to anyone, but you start to realise you're mortal and you can't do the things you used to do. And that's kind of like where that place that character was. And it was interesting to see the psychological way they played him, the Ferrari boss played him to get him racing again. He knew it was happening.
Was the real Ferrari boss?
Was it?
Yeah, no. Well, Ferrari, as Richard said earlier, when they went and showed Ferrari, they loved it that much. They used, I'm sure, he was the director of Ferrari.
No, I think he's an actor.
Really?
Yeah. I'm looking through the list now. I'm pretty sure. I recognise his face. I'm pretty sure he's an actor.
Maybe you just recognise him from Formula One.
No, honestly.
Yeah, I think the scenes where the press are craving for the crashes and the blood.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it was done well. I think they were rushed.
Sense. It was quite unsubtle. Sorry, Mark.
Mm. And now you come to mention it, the scene at the end when she's waving her hands around with blood on them, that was about as subtle as a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the worst cases of overacting I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think she's guilty of doing that a few times in the film. To various degrees.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think the women were given good parts. Or directed well, or...
I think the women were in there for the parts. And that's all. They were just in there as props to get audiences in.
Although, I mean, that's what it's all about now, though. And you look at a Formula One race and it's nothing but scantily clad women in the background.
Why do you think I follow it? Fast cars and naked ladies. Bloody hell.
Not an audio cast where it was going into the gutter just once.
Anyway, Stephen, you were going to say something. You wanted to make a point about...
Just
something.
A quick one about the... I mean, a lot of it looked like there was a bit of post-production on the audio, but the Japanese guy, he was speaking English, because if you press mute, you could lip-read him. Yeah, for some reason, they dubbed his voice. Mm. I mean, they dubbed it with a big voice actor, but I couldn't understand why they dubbed it, and you could tell it was dubbed. It sounded like, you know these mock-dub films you'll see where they pretend they're mocking a dub. It felt like that. It was just sort of place.
Yeah, apparently what it was, it was on one of the film sites that I was looking at, Wikipedia or IMDb. It's because he is Japanese and his Japanese accent was that strong that it made his English unintelligible.
Well, unintelligible to an American audience.
Yeah, again, you know, so that's why it was done. But yeah, that annoyed me as well. It was like watching a really bad kung fu film.
Yeah. I mean, I loved Yves Montand, the French guy. I mean, he's the main guy in Jean de Florette, and he's fantastic in that as well. I mean, but I thought he had the best.
He's one of those true Hollywood stars kind of idea, isn't he? Because he just came on screen, and he just had to be standing there, and eyes were drawn to him. He just commanded the screen. He's got that personality and the best role, I think, in the film.
Yeah. I think he was one of those French actors where they need... Whereas now... They probably get, I forgot his name, the guy in the gangster film last year's French guy.
Depardieu?
No.
Daniel?
No.
Jean Reno?
I know, Vincent Cassel.
Yeah, he's like the 60s, 70s Vincent Cassel.
Yeah, I can see that. Vincent Cassel's awesome. Grand Prix won Oscars for... Oh, come on, screen's gone. Best Effects... Sound effects, best film editing, and best sound.
Yeah,
I'd go with all that.
So there was something I was going to mention as well. In the extras, I find out that it wasn't James Garner who was going to play the lead. It was Steve McQueen. Mm-hmm. Frankenheimer didn't have time to go and meet McQueen. He thought it was in the bag, and his second in charge saw him, his business manager, and messed up the interview. Steve McQueen walked away and decided to go and make his own film, Le Mans. So they had to get someone else to replace him. And I presume at this point they've written the part for McQueen. So in comes James Garner. And it's funny that knowing that and then looking back on the film, you can see James Garner playing Steve McQueen.
Mm.
Steve McQueen in a film, and he admits this, they talk about this all the time, is that he'll try and do the least amount of dialogue and try and do it with looks and actions and moody looking at characters. And that happened a lot to James Garner in this film. It wasn't a normal James Garner performance, I thought.
No. But when I found out about the Steve McQueen piece, I could see that it had been written for Steve McQueen, And I don't think the role, I'll be careful here, because Garner was great in it. I don't think the role necessarily played to Garner's strengths, if that makes sense. And at times when I was watching it, it just seemed a little bit ill-fitting for him.
Mm.
And I can't put my finger on why. And that's all I've got to say. But, you know, he is a great actor and he was great in it. But it just didn't seem to kind of gel properly at times.
Seemed a little too clean, a little too polished.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's all I've got to say. I just can't explain it any further than that, really.
Maybe it was the fact that he felt like he was playing Steve McQueen in the role.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, if you've built the role and written the role for Steve McQueen and then he doesn't take it, then you've obviously got problems.
I think on the back of the Steve McQueen, though, I think, and it showed how clever John Frankenheimer was that when he found out Steve McQueen was making another film, he went out and he signed up all these drivers to 2-year contracts.
Mm.
So he had them ready for when his film came around to filming. Because that's when he ended up with all these drivers. He'd been over in 65 and signed them all up.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some legal wrangling, wasn't there? Because they filmed a load of stuff at the Nürburgring in Germany? And they shot a full race there, and he had to hand over all the footage.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Things that you learn on the internet, part
so,
nine.
So what was that? Frankenheimer filmed the entire race there, and then
yeah,
and then handed over the footage to who?
Yeah, to McQueen.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'll see if I can, yeah, it was, I think. I'll see if I can find the thing that I read. So it was really interesting, because I was like, yeah, that track, I think, would have added something to the flick, but...
Yeah, it's on a wiki on the production.
Yeah, there you go.
27 reels. I don't know how big a reel is, but obviously a lot of filming.
So what... I don't get that. So what did... what was McQueen hoping to benefit from that? Because Le Mans has nothing to do with F1.
There was another film in production at the same time, I think.
Oh, was he trying to do another F1 production?
Yeah, and I think this one beat it, you know, through the gates. And the McQueen one was... I just don't know what happened, but they ended up having to hand over all this footage. Mm.
Did he not do a Le Mans film, Steve McQueen, and finish it? And I'm sure he never did finish this Formula One film he was doing.
I wonder how his film would have turned out. I think, well, considering I haven't seen Le Mans, but I've heard Le Mans is basically the race and no dialogue. So we would have just seen racing.
I don't think with Steve McQueen directing either, you wouldn't get the, you know, the technical brilliance of this film as far as the camera work goes.
Yeah, that's what I think. I just think would see a lot of action not filmed in a standard way and not really given us the feeling of speed and power and actually being there that Frankenheimer managed to do. And in fact, considering that Steve McQueen didn't direct anything, I think that would have been a real bad move.
Yeah. There's a bit here on the missing reels. The making was a race itself, as John Sturgis and Steve McQueen planned to make a similar movie titled Day of the Champion. Due to their contract with the German Nürburgring, Frankenheimer had to turn over 27 reels shot there to Sturgis. Frankenheimer was ahead in schedule anyway, and the McQueen-Sturgis project was called off, while the German racetrack was only mentioned briefly in Grand Prix.
Oh. Yeah.
I think had McQueen directed it, the racing would have looked like Elliot Gould's in Capricorn 1.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, yeah, and for anybody who hasn't listened to that audio cast, you should go back and listen to it, because it's very good. But there were just complaints about his car falling apart, and he was all forever changing gear, wasn't he? And
yeah.
It was just a bit of a farce in your minds. That's a good film. Has anybody else got anything else about the film?
Take out all the melodrama, and you'd have had a fantastic documentary of a Formula One season. And you could watch it as a doc. I mean, and I'm sure there's loads of other footage that wasn't used. And I just loved the action in this film. And I'm not an action fan. I just thought it was done beautifully.
Yeah, I don't think it would have held up. If we took out all the story, it wouldn't have progressed as a racing film, because you didn't get the feeling of the drivers jostling for position. You did in individual scenes, but from race to race, you didn't get the idea of this is the fourth race in the series of 10, and we're now with positions 1, 2, 3 like this, and the next race, oh, the 2 and 3 have changed position, they're closer to 1. That kind of thing wasn't there at all.
I'm watching it for the racing, or for the race, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The race was fantastic, and
yes,
it didn't matter about the race.
The racing itself was fantastic, but you couldn't have watched 2-3 hours of that.
Well, no, it would have been an hour and a half.
Yeah, I don't even think it would have been that.
Yeah, because throughout the film, I was waiting for this racing, and it just looked, I mean, the helicopter shots at Spa, the closer look at, what was the English circuit called? Brands Hatch. A lot of the races had that different feel. The banking at Monza.
Yeah, the
action, you could have took it all out. You could have watched the hour and a half of action and really enjoyed it for what it was.
I don't think there was even an hour and a half. It would have been so much better if we could have felt a much stronger progression from race to race and of the drivers battling. I think that would have just made it amazing. Meanwhile, Mark stays silent.
Yeah, my big bugbear with the flick is there's two films in there. There's a melodrama, which, you know, take the racing out of it, it wouldn't look out of place on Neighbours. And there's some absolutely amazing footage of the actual kind of, you know, the Grand Prix themselves. And I'm firmly in the Stephen camp here. I'm sorry, I'd much rather have watched a couple of hours of the racing. And yet, take or leave that melodrama. And I would love to watch both pieces separately and see how they stack up against each other, because I'm not sure that the kind of bits that try to make it into a cohesive story and film would work, and I just don't think they would.
On their own,
there's just no chance.
No, I think I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, but the flip side of that is I'm not a Formula One fan. In fact, you know, I purposely switch over when it's on the telly. But I thought the racing was amazing.
Yeah, the racing was amazing. I agree, but it's like watching a season of, I don't know, because I don't follow football, but 10 football matches building up to the final, and yet you only see 3 of them, and you don't have any clear idea of who's playing sometimes and who's won each game.
Yeah, I think with a football game, if I'd have seen a montage of football matches and no idea who's winning, who's progressing, as a football fan, that might have annoyed me. Whereas if I didn't like football, like I'm not a Formula One fan, just seeing the racing without knowing who's winning, who's second, it didn't matter. I think, from a fan point of view for yourself...
I get that. I agree with that. I get that. I understand that. But I just don't think you'd have watched an hour and a half of that and still felt as excited.
But I did watch an hour and a half of that.
No. But you watched an hour and a half of it split up.
Waiting for that.
Yeah, and because you were waiting, it was building up inside you, you're getting more excited. Probably not too excited. Get more. The tension was going. You know, they were stringing it out for you.
It just looked fantastic, and I was.
Yeah. Unless you just said you were anticipating every section, and you wanted it to hurry up to come into the next bit of racing. Exactly what was happening. They were stringing it out and waiting for, and making you wait for it.
No, I don't think they were trying to.
You crushed that altogether.
They were trying to make it into a film rather than.
It doesn't matter why they were doing it. You just said that's exactly what happened. And you were anticipating.
No, I wasn't enjoying the cutscenes of the melodrama. Wasn't to make me want to get the action.
No, I'm not saying.
I did it. He was
but
trying
that's
to get the
what happened. And that's what made every individual scene better for you. But I'm saying if you cram them all together in one film, you're not going to be sitting there feeling as good about Grand Prix as you are now. You'll be sitting there going, I guarantee that halfway through you'll be going, you know, this is looking good, but now, you know, there's just no cohesiveness to it. I don't know.
No,
it would just be an hour and a half of shots of the cars racing, which are wonderfully filmed.
The good thing about the film.
Sorry, say that again.
Those action shots is what was the best part about the film.
Yeah, definitely. And if they'd done it as a proper documentary with a bit of, you know, trackside commentary, you'd still get the, oh, who's winning, who's up to here, who's number two, who's at number three. And you could have done away with 90 minutes of fluff. Sorry, I didn't mean to swear then.
Yeah, that's a totally different film again. What Stephen was saying is that if you just cut out everything and put the driving together, that would have been a better film.
Yeah. Because with that driving, there was also the talk of Garner saying how he was feeling. I mean, you would hear Garner's voice and he'd say, what's going through his mind when he's racing?
Yeah, but that wouldn't have made much sense without the story and understanding what his character was, especially with Yves Montand.
There's a documentary of Formula One filmed the way it was filmed, with the dialogue of what the drivers were thinking while they're seeing the action. Would have been really good.
Yeah, it would have been. And in Stephen's defence, Richard, I've got to say, I somehow doubt that they won a sound Oscar for the scene where they're all dancing.
No, and I'm not arguing that at all. What I'm saying, I'll repeat it again, but if you just cut out everything and just left the racing, you would not be as excited about the racing as you were. I'm not saying the rest of it made it better. It's just the fact it's scenes of racing one after the other that don't connect properly.
Don't
give the feeling of proper racing. And then all those dialogue scenes, all those monologue scenes when they're racing, won't make as much sense and won't feel as dramatic.
Yeah, but that's not what Stephen's saying. Stephen's saying include the bits by the track so you know where people are up to. It's just that whole melodrama thing. It was just rubbish.
Those middle bits, the bits where the woman gets picked up by the English guy and they go off to Greece, you don't need that. You don't need Garner going to bed with the Stottard's wife. None of that matters. The talk of them, how they feel while racing, would still be in there while it's showing the film. You don't need the melodrama. It's like wearing tight shoes because you enjoy what it feels like when you take them off.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me, Stephen, the tight shoes bit, but never mind.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not watching the melodrama because it's then going to make the racing any more exciting. The racing without the melodrama is still exciting. And you could watch an hour and a half as a documentary because it's been filmed fantastically.
Exactly. So what you're saying is you'd have to remake the film.
Well, no, you could.
What you could do is just chop out the action scenes and chuck them together.
You couldn't just do a complete cut as it was. But no. You get the talking of how they feel when they're driving, how they wonder, will they survive, how they feel when the friend dies. This would all be over the top of the action.
Yeah, you can't tell me, it's a 3-hour film, that if you chopped an hour out of that film, it wouldn't be a whole different ballgame and be a lot better, because it would be.
Oh, I agree, you could easily chop out bits of the film, but you couldn't just take the end-to-end racing and put that into one film. Don't do anything else to it, just chop it into one film and go, there you go, that's better than Grand Prix.
Because the film's not about who wins.
You could do it, but it wouldn't be better than Grand Prix.
Yeah, because the film's not about who wins Grand Prix. The film's about how these people cope riding and racing in a Grand Prix, what they're thinking, what they're doing, what motivates them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who wins. It's what motivates them to get in a car, travel at 180 mile an hour, and think, I'm going to die, and carry on. See somebody die, drive past a car on fire, and still go. And what keeps them driving around is what matters. It's not the neighbours scenes in between the action.
Yeah, so I don't understand. What I think what you two are saying is you could make a different film if you cut out the melodrama, but you'd have to have something different. What we were talking about earlier is you were saying you could just cut out all of the dramatic action between and just have the racing, and you'd have liked to watch just the racing. But what I was saying is doing that, it would be a much lesser film, and it wouldn't make half the sense it did without understanding some of the characters between those actual races. Or they would have to they would have to make it better in progressing it race by race.
No, I think what I said, or what I meant to say, was that it would have been a great documentary had you cut out all the melodrama.
And had more footage of the racing.
Well, no, the footage was... I'm sure there was other edited footage that wasn't used to fit the melodrama in. But even without that, I bet there's a good hour and 20 minutes of racing. Including the montage where you've got, like I said, Garner chatting, Monton chatting, and film footage in the other split screen.
Yeah, you haven't convinced me. I still believe that it would then be even more apparent that there's no progression race to race and no understanding of who's.
You'll admit, though, that the weak part of the film is the in between the racing.
The weak part of the film are some of the storylines. Because I wouldn't even say for an instant the Sarti storyline is a weak one. I like that. Maybe the romance is a bit weak. The young Italian drivers is a weak storyline. So, yeah, so there are some weak bits in those stories, but I think There's no way you can say Sarti's storyline is weak. I think that's hugely relevant.
No, the story necessarily is not weak. I think it was done badly. I mean, the fishing scene was poor. The
well,
scene,
that's the romance scene, yeah.
The scene where they were in the museum was poor. I mean, there was a storyline there that you, a lot of it, you, it was right at the very end where it was talking with the manager of the racing. I mean, it was, there was a lot of melodrama. I think we've used that word a lot today.
Yes, yeah. I think we get the idea.
It was a fluff film, fluffy, with great racing scenes. And it would have held us all with the racing. Well, not pitched as the same type of film, but you just get that racing and it'll sell. It'll still win the same Oscars it won if you take out all the melodrama. That's how I can end it.
Okay, well, I disagree with that. And I've already said why a few times. And I'm sure people agree with me more. And in fact, I'll sign on as different people and put in comments. Richard's right. Believe me, Richard's really right.
27 people with the same IP address.
Damn it. So, that was Grand Prix. Actually, do you know what? We started off very positively about it, and then we had a big argument about it, and now you're saying...
No, I mean, I could watch it again, and I could watch, and I wouldn't fast-forward those middle bits. I just... We're not going to, I just said.
We're just going to repeat the same thing again.
Yeah, you're going to get back into it again, guys.
Yeah.
It was a good film. Very good film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree. So that was Grand Prix, I think. I don't think there's anything else to say about that now, is there?
No, nothing.
Apart from, it's interesting the way it ends. It strikes an odd discord for films of that time, I think, because it's quite dark, and it's
does
not...
That ends how it would end in real life, though.
Yeah, well, no, not the way it's shown. So forget about who wins and everything, but the shot behind them with the smoke rising and everything turns to the darker side of the accident and the person who's just died. And that's actually the note it ends on, not the win, which I thought was quite interesting.
Mean, yeah.
Because I expected the Hollywood moment was when he won and he's cheering and the guy comes up with him and it was all going to be really good. And okay, there's been a death, that's bad, but we'll keep soldiering on. But no, it lingers more on the accident and how it's marred everything.
That's his moment of reflection, isn't it? Because he gets the Scottish guy on the stand as well, who's kind of fought back from that accident.
Yeah.
So it kind of comes back around, 360. Mm. I just think it worked. I thought the ending worked really well, and I thought the bit after the ending, where he's kind of walking down the track alone, reflecting. I thought that was just great.
Yeah, I really like that as well.
But
I just think it was quite not a negative, darker. It was a darker ending for a film that I would have expected to end more upbeat for that time. And I like it for that reason, actually.
I think for that time, it's probably even more so. That, I mean, we still get people dying. NASCAR has deaths, Formula One's like that. But in those days, death was a lot more common.
Mm.
So, although it seemed like a darker finish, death was more... I mean, it probably wasn't... No, you don't get a death as often in a race. Whereas then, it was happening a lot more often.
Yeah.
Mm. It was a bigger part of a Formula One life. I mean, a lot of those drivers died after that was made.
Yeah, was that in the extras that they did that? They talked about how many of the drivers that started.
Yeah, three or four. And I mean, Raymond died on the way back from the race, didn't he? In an helicopter crash. But the others all died racing.
Okay, so that was Grand Prix that time. And I don't think we're going to enter into any more arguments about it. So I hope you enjoyed that. And we'll see you for round 7. So it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Mark.
Goodbye.
Who's going to punt his site again?
No, I don't think I'm going to bother this time. Who's going to break with the routine?
Okay, that's crazy talk. And yeah. It's goodbye from Stephen, who doesn't have a site.
No, but I'll mention Mark's, my book of photography.
Clever, like you did there. I was actually going to say, Stephen, you're looking for a job soon, but...
I will be, yeah. Anything where I can work from home would be ideal.
That was us, so thanks very much, and we'll see you next time. Cheers. Yeah.
Windmayer takes you to the glamour capitals of the world and sweeps you into a drama of speed and spectacle. Brought to the screen with an all-star international cast. James Garner as Pete Aaron, the American.
I won a lot of races for you.
Of course you did. Before you became reckless.
I want to be champion.
Everyone wants to be a champion, Aaron. There is no distinction in that.
I can be.
From France, Yves Montand as Jean-Paul Sartre.
When I see something really horrible, I put my foot down. Hard. Because I know that everyone else is lifting his.
What a terrible way to win.
No. There is no terrible way to win. There is only winning.
Eva Marie Saint as Louise.
Jean-Pierre, you can stop. If you feel as you do, you can stop now.
Not so easy.
From Japan, Toshiro Mifune as Yamura. England's Brian Bedford as Scott Stoddard. Jessica Walter as Pat. Antonio Sabato of Italy as Nino. And introducing French singing star Françoise Hardy as Lisa.
I'm leaving you.
Leaving? For how long?
For always, you fool. Forever.
You're old enough to make your own decision.
Then I'm going. All right?
Yes, I definitely think you should go to the Greek island with your American boyfriend. I think you should go to hell.
These are the men and women who live for the dare and the danger. Here are the reckless and the romantic. The cheers for the challengers and the champions. The excitement of Monaco, Spa, Zandvoort, Monza. Grand Prix.